Welcome to our second podcast here at YuriBrito.com. These are trial episodes to see if there's any interest. If there is about 20% of interest from my readers and my listeners, I will continue this. If not, as I've mentioned yesterday, I will return to my internal thoughts on these issues. But I come across a host of articles that I read during lunchtime and later on at night, and I have obviously thoughts about them, and I thought I'd share them with you, and I hope they will be encouraging to you as I attempt to think through these issues biblically and contemplate them from a Christian worldview. Once again, thank you for joining us on this episode. On this episode, I want to talk about the three issues. The first news has to do with the recent proposal, the introduction of a bill to modernize the school day from presidential candidate for the Democratic Party, Kamala Harris, who wants to increase the school time by 2 hours. The second bit of news has to do with an article published by Religion News Service entitled Douglas Wilson's Spiritual Takeover Plan Roils Idaho College Town. That should be interesting. And the final piece of news that I want to tackle is the liberal Christian group who attacked U.S. Attorney General William Barr for speaking in what he believed to be the way the nation was founded and how Christianity sort of encourages the moral perseverance of a nation. So these are our three news I want to talk about this afternoon. In an article published by Mother Jones entitled The School Day is 2 Hours Shorter Than the Workday, Kamala Harris wants to change that. The article begins by saying that the mismatch between the school day and the workday presents a real burden to working Americans with families, and Senator Kamala Harris has a new bill that seeks to correct it. And the argument, of course, is that the majority of school days end at around 3 p.m., 2 hours before the end of 70% of parents' workdays, and most school days don't have a way to make up the difference. And there are only few options that would be offered as an after-school care, but there is a misalignment because there are 29 days during the school year, the majority of which are reserved for professional development, parent-teacher conferences, and a myriad of vacations and minor holidays that the federal government doesn't recognize. Kamala Harris' proposal is to increase or offer a variety of programs after school so that there isn't much of a discrepancy between the time in between the end of the school day and the time between the end of a parent's workday, therefore providing parents more hours for productivity at work and providing other opportunities for children after school to increase in learning in a variety of productive classes, classes that would instruct children in other subjects. So there are a host of things to say about this issue here. But the first thing, of course, is that who owns the schools own the children. I think that's the title of one of Gary DeMar's book. The reality, of course, is that government education has a very unique agenda for children in our country. It is distinctly anti-Christian, and in the vestiges of Christianity that exist in the public educational system are insufficient, we would say, to provide the kind of holistic educational system that we would want for children who grow up in a Christian home. The Bible very specifically says in the book of Ephesians chapter 6 that we are to nurture our children in the admonition of the Lord. And Deuteronomy 6, there's also a profound imperative that when our children are lying down, when they're going to sleep, that the Christian view of the world ought to be pervasive, and that our children ought to be, we could be very blunt about this, indoctrinated with Christian language, Christian vocabulary, Christian grammar. Kamala Harris' platform is not looking at this, of course, through a Christian worldview. Of course, we know Kamala Harris's record on these things. The other point to that is that parents would receive an additional incentive to work more and to be less involved in the life of the children, giving the government educational system more opportunities to instruct, whereas we believe that the majority of this role ought to be under the protection and guidance of on the umbrella of parents. And so, whereas the supposed productivity would increase, we're also looking at a variety of moral positions here that are very subtly introduced in this bill that is proposed by Kamala Harris. So I would, of course, oppose it. Of course, I would believe that there is a very unique role that government ought to play on a variety of issues, and education is at the very bottom of that ladder. But at the same time, I would also say that we have a multitude of Christians in these kinds of government school systems. And should this proposal ever be made into law, this piece of bill ever be introduced and receive a majority vote in Congress and then in Senate, I think Christian parents whose children are in public schools ought to consider that this is not a neutral perspective, that we're looking at two things here in summary: the increase of the government's moral agenda, and the educational and didactic process would increase, thus providing greater opportunities for the government to instill their viewpoint on our children. And also, parents would be motivated, incentivized, perhaps to work more and to decrease the quality level of training that they would give their children. And so I think in this situation, whereas the agenda of Kamala Harris views it as a win-win, I think for the Christian, it's a lose-lose proposition. The second piece of news is from FoxNews.com, and an article entitled "Liberal Christian Group Attacks Barr Speech as Toxic Christianity." U.S. Attorney General William Barr has come under fire from a liberal Christian group for a speech he made at Notre Dame University Law School. The group claims he violated his oath to defend religious liberty for all Americans, and the group's called Faithful America, which said that Barr's speech was too focused on Christianity, and therefore they filed a complaint with the Justice Department Office of Professional Responsibility. Even a former Obama faith advisor, Christopher Hale, has said that this group has gone too far, but has not kept this group from speaking out against the speech delivered by U.S. Attorney General Barr. And what did Barr actually say? Barr said that the founding generation of the United States were Christians, and that they believed that the Judeo-Christian moral system corresponds to the true nature of man. And he continues, he says, "Those moral precepts start with two great commandments, to love God with your whole heart, soul, mind, and to love thy neighbor as thyself." The group, of course, went insane and attacked Barr's speech as toxic Christian nationalism and demanded that DOJ remove the speech from its website, according to FoxNews.com. Of course, this kind of rhetoric from U.S. Attorney General Barr is really far from the kind of explicit biblical rhetoric, but yet, even this minimalistic Judeo-Christian approach from the U.S. Attorney requires this kind of reaction from so-called Christian leftist groups. When you think about it, the kind of basic statement that Barr made really, and the reaction that he received, it's really another revelation that, pun intended, the bar, the standard for what is considered to be offensive to liberal Christians, has progressively, again, pun intended, diminished over the years. Whereas there was a time when Christians would state, "Jesus is Lord, Jesus is King, Jesus is a supreme ruler," and even the profoundly Christian statements made by presidents like Ronald Reagan, for example, in the 1980s, these statements are now viewed as radical. And now all you have to do is to say something like, "Biblical commandment, moral precept, love God with your heart, soul, mind, and strength, love thy neighbor as thyself." These couldn't be more generic. And yet, these groups, this one's called Faithful America, which is fairly ironic, react calling this a toxic Christian nationalist speech. This kind of violation of free speech in America is really increasing, and I truly hope this actually comes to a kind of theological civil war where we contemplate the fact that Christians are no longer able to have their voices freely articulated in the public square, particularly in secular university campuses. And now what we're seeing here is actually that these things are garnering, they're building up an army of very vocal and capable apologists like Ben Shapiro and Michael Knowles and a host of others who are taking the bait and going to these campuses and speaking. The reaction, of course, has been severe, but even atheist liberals like Bill Maher has spoken out against this kind of overreaction. But the reaction to these basic Christian premises is also an indication of where our youth is, where our civilization society is. It's a kind of measurement, the temperature of where our society is. And so I think the Christian response to this kind of reaction is to not cower, but to continue to speak truth and to continue to be winsome and to continue to be, in many ways, daring to speak about what they believe to be true, right, and beautiful. The Christian ought not to step back, but we ought to take two steps forward. When the secularists take a step forward in our direction, we take a step forward back. We move towards where the enemy is. The proposition in the Gospel of Matthew, where it says the gates of hell shall not prevail, it's not a proposition where the Christian faith is a defensive faith, but rather a proposition where the Christian faith moves forward with biblical truthfulness, with biblical integrity. Let's not cower, but let's move towards the gates of hell, because I believe the church has a responsibility to increase our voice in the public square. And I think these responses ought to be for the Christian an invitation rather than a warning to back off. Our final note is fairly personal, because I'm fully aware of whom the article is speaking of at a personal level. I've known Doug Wilson for over a decade now. We are acquaintances, I should say. But the article actually came on religious news service, religiousnews.com, where I visit at least a few times a week. And the article published by Tracy Simmons is entitled "Douglas Wilson's Spiritual Takeover Plan Roils Idaho College Town." Now, for many of you who know, Douglas Wilson is or was one of the founding members of the denomination in which I pastored, the CREC, the Communion of Reformed Evangelical Churches, and he is a vocal voice for truth in our society who gained some level of notoriety and prominence nationally when he debated the Christopher Hitchens some years ago, and did a mighty fine job presenting the Christian faith. He sort of did a tour with Christopher Hitchens in a variety of places in the U.S. and also various media outlets, and held himself quite well, I might say, in those debates. But Doug Wilson is a relatively controversial figure, especially in the kind of bland, or as he would say, evangelifish evangelicalism of our day. And the article essentially talks about how the city of Moscow, with about 25,000 people, is the home University of Idaho, filled with the kinds of things you'd expect Pacific Northwest, you know, trendy coffee shops and restaurants. It's a place where the heart of the arts, a place where the arts sort of thrive. Really a remarkable city. I've been there once, had a chance to visit a very tight-knit group, especially the CREC churches that are fairly aligned in their view of the world. Wilson's the kind of a man who has embraced the optimism of history, which we refer to in theology as postmillennialism, and he has embraced it fully, whereas there are some who view postmillennialism as sort of an attractive utopian view and may desire from afar. Wilson actually lives out his postmillennialism. He's a man who has started Christian schools, Christian institutions, churches, who has really done a fine job in establishing a social media presence that calls attention. And I think Wilson's the kind of man who makes the right kind of enemies, I would say. But of course, Pastor Wilson is not merely interested in conveying spiritual realities. Wilson lives out his postmillennial view and is deeply concerned about transforming the politics and the soul of a little town like Moscow, Idaho, and I think he's doing quite well. Wilson talks about how the desire is to provide Christian leadership in every area of life. Again, for those of you who know of my work in Kuiperianism and visit our website, kuiper.com, you know that our view very much aligns with Pastor Wilson's view. Now, the response, of course, from secularism and the response of mainline Christianity, which, as Machen would say, is no longer Christianity, the response, of course, is always to be expected. Nothing new under the sun, and particularly there's nothing new in the response of secularism towards an explicit form of Christianity. I recall some time ago, many years ago, when Christopher Hitchens talked about his fear of Doug, meaning that he wasn't fearful that Doug Wilson was the kind of typical evangelical, but he was fearful that Doug is the kind of man who actually believes what he says. And I think what Doug has done in Moscow, Idaho, is the kind of reality that a Christian ought to embrace, a holistic reality, a reality that is not so only concerned about what happens within the four walls of the church, but also the reality that says that the church has been commissioned by the Lord of glory, the Lord of heaven and earth, Jesus Christ, and calls us to go into all the nations of the earth, proclaim the gospel, baptize, and disciple. And what Doug is really good at is discipling. He may disciple in a way that you think will be a little bit in the serrated edge, but I'm sure he embraces that quite well since he's talked about it. But still, it's a discipleship that is not shy nor timid about proclaiming the lordship of Jesus in all areas of life. And listen, we need to be on guard that we don't forsake our commission. We have been commissioned by God to go forth and to proclaim a message that is an unadulterated gospel. What the church cannot do is what the church has done, which has been the spiritualizing of its institution and treating the church as if it's merely a kind of museum that rests on the shoulders of the dead, that rests on its past. But the church is a church rooted in the past, but a church that continues. The gospel transcends time. The gospel of the past didn't stay in the past. The gospel of the Apostle Paul and Johann Huss is a gospel that speaks to us now and speak to us, will continue to speak to us in the future. And it's a gospel that is not meant to be static, but a gospel that is to be taken to every corner of the earth, not only to the dinner table, but to the tables of restaurants, to the tables at pubs, to the tables where we fellowship, and certainly culminating at the table of our Lord each Sunday. So, a mighty cheers for Doug Wilson and his tribe in Moscow, Idaho. Hope you enjoyed our conversation. Feel free to leave a message. And if you enjoyed this here, you have any recommendations, I would love to hear from you. Thank you again, and may the Lord be with you.